Shalom, my friends. It's always good to be back in the congregation where I do not own the problems. At least that's what my wife tells me when she wishes me well as I come here. I'd like to crack open the door a little bit of the workshop and explain how it came to be that this is the week of the six-week Epiphany season that I have the privilege of sharing a message with you. Father Noah and I were looking at the various weeks available, and he told me that the scriptural reading for today begins with the chapter 58 reading from the book of Isaiah about sharing your bread with the hungry and sheltering those who need shelter. It turns out that that is the very same reading as is chosen in Jewish synagogues around the world for the most important day of our liturgical year, the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. And that's our understanding of the meaning of the fast. The meaning of the fast of the Day of Atonement is to raise our consciousness to be empathetic forces for the repair of society. So I thought that that would be the ideal moment to share a perspective on that. And to help me explain what I want to share with you, I've brought a visual aid. I don't typically do this, but I'd like to show you something. I'd like to introduce you to a cherished part of my family known as Baby Blue. Baby Blue's been a member of our family for about 44 years. I'll explain the circumstances. I was ordained from the Jewish Theological Seminary in 1982. I did not follow the typical career trajectory of most of my classmates, entering congregational service, beginning as an associate in a large congregation or as a solo in a small congregation and gradually working up the ladder if possible, and so on and so forth. Didn't do that. I remained at the seminary and I took a PhD in Jewish history because I always wanted to divide my efforts between congregational service and academic service. To make that possible with a small but already growing family, I came to serve a very small pulpit across the Hudson River in Bergen County, New Jersey. In our parlance, we call them student pulpits because frequently a rabbinic intern rather than an ordained rabbi serves in those congregations. I was already ordained and the congregation was happy to have a rabbi with some more experience. They were pleased that for once they weren't going to get to be the scene of a rookie mistake. And we ended up having a very fine decade of connection. Because I finished my PhD, the seminary offered me a position, I went on faculty there and remained there till my family and I came to serve in Norfolk, and we've been here since 1992. Now, there's a feature of congregational life in these small, small congregations. There's typically a new person in the pulpit every 2 to 3 years. Now, that means a lot of things for the congregants, but it also means something you might not have thought about. It means that any number of people who require charity want to be first in line when there's a new person there. So within a very short period after my arrival in the little town of Maywood, New Jersey, a whole host of people had come asking for handouts. And I must confess, this was not something that my seminary education covered at all. But thankfully, my late father was a pulpit rabbi, and serving not far in Paterson, New Jersey, and he was able to help me. But in the midst of learning these people's stories, and I'm not offering any harsh judgment on them at all, but one person stood out in my memory, and I still cherish the memory of this connection to this day, as I shall explain. I'll call him Neil. He came to the congregation perhaps a month after I had arrived. It was a splendid early fall day. The leaves were already coming down. They were on the synagogue yard. And he asked me if I had a day of work that I could pay him for. I was very much impressed that he was looking for a day of work. So I asked him if he would consider spending time raking and bagging the leaves, and he did. He did a good job. And that was the first of a series of connections with him. He knew to come. He had a certain sense of how often could he come to the well. And there were different seasonal tasks that he was able to do for us. He shoveled snow in the winter. But you know what snow is? I'll bet you do now, right? I had a study partner, by the way, my first year at seminary, who told me that his parents were moving south. And I said, how far south? This was in New York City where I was in school. He said, they don't know, but they have a way of figuring it out. They're going to bolt a snow shovel to the hood of their car. And when they stop for gas, and the first time that a gas station attendant says, what's that? They'll say, we're far enough. So in the wintertime, he would shovel snow. In the fall, he would rake leaves and so on and so forth. He once painted a room whose volunteers had given up the job of painting. He finished that. He did lots of things for us. I want to share a few things more about him. He was homeless for a reason. He'd been a veteran. He had Vietnam experience that contributed to his PTSD and subsequent difficulties that ended up leaving him homeless. Eventually, it took me years to persuade him to do this, but eventually I got him to overcome his reticence and go to the Veterans Authority, and the VA began to give him the help that he really needed. I was grateful that finally he was able to get the help that he needed. But I want to tell you about three incidents during this decade of my knowing him. He called me once from jail, Huntington County, New Jersey. He'd done nothing wrong, except he was a homeless person in the wrong place at the wrong time. A church had been broken into, the till had been rifled, and the conventional assumption is that he had motive, means, and opportunity. The only problem is that he wasn't the guy. So I drove down from Bergen County to Huntington County. It's about an hour and a half's drive. And I got to court, and the much, you know, overworked public defender who was assigned his case asked me, what am I doing there? And I said, I'm here to serve as a character witness for the defendant. So he brought the attention to the judge, and they don't call them Commonwealth attorneys there, the district attorney. I would interpret his look at me as kind of like coolly appraising. But it must have been worth something, because they then agreed to a plea deal. And he was sentenced to the time already served and released that day. However, they also fined him the few meager dollars that were in his pocket. So that's one story. The second story is that I hired him once to help me clean out my parents' house. After my parents had retired, they were vacating the synagogue parsonage that they'd lived in and were moving into a retirement home. And I had the job of doing the last part of the cleaning out. And I hired this gentleman to help me for the day. We agreed upon the day's salary. It took longer, significantly longer than I thought it should take. And when we were finally finished and driving home, I said to him, "You've worked many hours more than we first anticipated. I want to pay you more than we first settled on." And he said, "I won't take it." He said, "We agreed on a day's work. This is the day's work." I was struck because I knew how needy he is. So I pressed and we compromised. He said, "I will take some extra pay if you will let me buy you dinner." Just consider a homeless person making that offer. And he had a particular pizzeria where I can't recommend the pizza so much. But I will tell you that that slice, which was my dinner that night, was exquisitely spiced. And the name of the spice is dignity. And the last story that I want to tell you about Neil is how Baby Blue came into our lives. Neil saw that our family was growing. We had two little children and a third one on the way. And the next time he showed up, he had this little blue plush doll for the baby to come. I was overcome with gratitude that, you know, a man in his position was thinking to give a gift. And some astonishment must have registered on my face, because he explained that in his lifestyle, he must walk at least 20 miles a day. And he picks up pennies. If ever I give this story again, I'll ask the congregation, "Do you remember what pennies are?" But I assume you still remember. He literally walked hundreds and hundreds of miles and bought this with pennies that he'd picked up. So I treasure it. We used it as a baby Moses in the basket in any number of Sunday school performances. My kids all loved it, you know, each one in turn as they were growing up, and each one becoming old enough learned the meaning of why this admittedly somewhat ratty, you know, doll means more to us than virtually any other toy that's in the house. Now, at the end of my decade of knowing him, Neil told me that it was just getting too expensive to find shelter in the cold winter of New Jersey. So he was going to become a snowbird. And he went to the Fort Lauderdale area in Florida every winter. Now, as it happens, we went to the Fort Lauderdale area to visit my late mother-in-law. And I had a sense of where he might be, and I never found him. Once he called me and said that the VA monthly check was late. Could I send him, not a tremendous amount of money, but a certain amount via Western Union, and he would repay it? And I thought, okay, here it goes, you know. But I wanted to do it as a parting gift, just thinking that it was a gift. Sure enough, full repayment came back within the month, plus the slight charge the Western Union charges. So that's the character of this man. Now, there's really not much need to give a sermon on top of that story, but I want to put it into a particular framework. We call this the season of Epiphany, the season of becoming aware of God's presence. What are the reminders of God's presence? Judaism and Christianity have somewhat different understandings at the level of superstructure, but at the fundamental level, we agree that the human is in God's image. Your fellow human should be a reminder of God's presence at all times. One of the greatest of the rabbis of the classical rabbinic period was Rabbi Akiva, Akiva, son of Joseph, a true hero and a martyr for his faith. He was cruelly put to death by the Romans for daring to teach Torah in public when the emperor Hadrian had outlawed that in the year 135. Akiva's teachings are found on almost every page of the Talmud. And in the one volume that's called the Rabbinic Book of Ethics, it's called the Chapters of the Fathers, one of Akiva's famous proverbs is recorded. Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tselem. Beloved is the human, for the human is created in God's image. I invite you to keep that in mind. In our daily lives, we run into people. We have all sorts of frames of signification that are possible. Today, you might run into someone who's wearing a particular sports paraphernalia item and think, ah, my team, or the other team. Or more broadly, you might think, even subconsciously, even atavistically, you might think, friend or foe. You might think, stranger danger. And of course, our whole country is sunk in that kind of thinking these days. Rabbi Akiva teaches us, on the contrary, when you see a fellow human, regardless of their circumstances, frame that encounter as, ah, the image of God in my presence. Friends, I think you know that this congregation is gearing up for a sheltering effort in the next month. My congregation has done the same. We used to call that initiative NEST, and now it has a different name. But I encourage you to respond in a spirit of loving kindness when given the opportunity to take advantage of this moment of perfecting society. Ultimately, my friend Neil, and he became my friend, taught me that the homeless are our neighbors too. And he taught me that the human face of the homeless, and don't forget, they have human faces. The human face of the homeless, just like yours and mine, holds a refracted fragment of the image of God. May we live up to that lesson. Amen.